Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. Thanks for being part of my days. My pleasure, as always. And I'm really excited about getting our good friend Doug Stiles back on the show. Doug is an original member of our Brain Trust. He's been with us a long time. He is the resident CPA of our Brain Trust. He is with the firm, formerly the senior partner at this firm called Kirchin & Company. We still want to plug them, I know, because for a couple of reasons. But he's with that firm, and but now sort of semi-retired from there. He's also a professor of a local university there in the New Jersey, in the Red Bank, New Jersey area. But more importantly, he's our good friend Doug Stiles. Welcome back to the show.
Jim, nice to be with you. It's been a long time.
It's been a while, and we've missed you. I thought maybe it was something I said.
I thought you were mad at me.
No, I thought you were mad at me, so we just had a stalemate there, huh? No, we're teasing, folks. Doug and I could never be mad at each other. Hey, Doug, now, the college that you're teaching at is what?
Monmouth University.
That's right, Monmouth University.
Yeah.
And you're teaching what?
The only thing I know much about, Jim, I'm teaching taxes and accounting.
All right, so is that like...
Isn't that exciting?
Is that like... Really? 291 and 391 and that kind of thing, just regular accounting courses?
Financial accounting, managerial accounting, and then I'm right now the only guy teaching three different tax courses over there.
Wow.
That's fun. But I tease about it. You know, I started a summer session yesterday, and I said, hey, this is accounting. It's dull by nature, but we try to make it fun. It's not easy either.
Well, it isn't easy, but you know, one of the things that I have tried to get my audience, my small business audience, to understand is that they don't have to be accountants. They don't even have to be bookkeepers. They don't even have to know they don't have to understand debits and credits to be able to manage their business with the information on financials like a profit and loss statement, a balance sheet, and a cash flow statement. They don't have to be any of those things to be able to manage their business with those, do they?
Well, absolutely. I agree with you. In fact, one of the concerns we have, and I teach this in my courses, is to get a business degree at our school and most schools around the country, you need 2 semesters of accounting. And the mistake a lot of people make, I have people that have been clients of my firm over the years, Jim, that have said, gee, Doug, I understand accounting. I took it in college. Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, you had 2 semesters, and that's almost dangerous. That's like saying you know how to fix your car if you know where the oil plug is, you know?
Right.
And I caution people about that. I have so many clients that think they understand debits and credits. They think they can read a financial statement. And not knocking it, but they really just have the tip of the iceberg staring at them.
Well, but you know, we got so many small business owners out there, Doug, who have never taken any accounting courses.
That's sometimes better.
Well, it may be, yeah. but they get intimidated by, or they're worried that, you know, if they don't demand, or they don't make sure that they get financial statements, and because they don't, you know, they know that accounting is boring, and they don't want to get into that, and they also think. They also think, and I think correctly, that if they got into it, that they would spend too much time on that and not enough time on growing their business. And I think that's a valid argument. But there, we just got to separate the accounting process from the record producing and managing with those records process.
Absolutely. It's so well said. I can't say it better. And I plead with clients all the time, and the accounting business is, look, I tell doctors, look, you keep your patients alive, and I tell my lawyers, you keep your clients out of jail, and we'll do the accounting. But you make a very valid point, Jim, is that I can't do quality accounting if you bring me lousy information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I plead with clients, is just list your expenses and list your income on an Excel spreadsheet. As you know, every time you write a check, put it in Excel, mm-hmm. or, as you know, some of the bank accounts now will tie into one of those programs, and that's all I need. People that try to bring me a set of financial statements, 99% of the time they're so fouled up, we have to throw them out and go back and reproduce them.
Well, in our office, you know, we have accounting records. We keep up with what we spend and what we take in and everything. And we produce, obviously, we produce the records in our CPA. There's our tax returns with, and we can produce, and then they produce financial statements for us. But more often than any of that that goes on, other than just putting in the checks and the deposits, more often than that, I personally, the founder and the president of this company, have my own cash flow spreadsheet that I manage myself. And we'll come back and we'll talk about that a little bit more, get Doug's thoughts on this. Right after these messages, 20 till the hour, Doug Stiles is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. Here are the Drifters to take us out.
Just drift right into space. On the roof is peaceful as can be.
Come from the cities and they come from the smaller towns. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Little John Mellencamp bringing us back. We're rocking in the USA on the Small Business Advocate Show, and of course, no other time do we rock more than when our resident CPA is with us, Doug Stives. Right, Doug?
Well, I don't know if I completely agree with you or not, because let's face it, accounting is dull.
You don't have your gray on right now, do you, Doug? I mean, do you have the gray on, the CPA gray?
Oh, the dome. We go beyond on the gray right to the dome.
It's good to have Doug back with us, folks. By the way, folks, my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Use them to your advantage. They're all there for you, and you can find past interviews that Doug and I have done on a number of topics that will help you with your business. You know, Doug, when we went to the break, I was talking about the cash flow statement that I manage. I manage that, and that cash flow statement does two things. It's not a statement, really. I shouldn't call it a statement. It's a cash flow electronic spreadsheet, and I built it myself, and I reconcile it with the cash that's in the bank. You know, every month I check to make sure that we're on track at the bank with our expenses. We have a budget for what we're spending, and then I use that spreadsheet to project where my cash is going to be at the end of each month for the next 12, sometimes, and then if I'm projecting sales, I project 24 months out.
Well, you're a pretty clever guy, Jim. We know that, but I'm being a little sarcastic, but when I teach this stuff, I point out to my students, you can have the most profitable enterprise that anybody ever invented, but if it doesn't make cash, you're out of business.
That's right.
I have a client who's retired, and I think he's probably dead by now, and he used to say to me, don't dazzle me with all those fancy financial statements you bring me. He says, I look in my checkbook, and if there's nothing there, I go out and find some more business. And he says, I'm as loaded with money, so I take it and pay tax on it, and that's the end of it. He called himself a checkbook accountant, and that's really what it comes down to is, clearly in a business plan or in looking historically at how your business is done, you look at the income statement, but I couldn't agree with Jim more, is that you've got to have that cash flow. And, you know, what drives bankers crazy is a guy shows up and says, I can't pay my bills this month. Can you loan me some money?
How about I can't pay my bills today?
Well,
I'm going to bounce. Or how about worse than that? And folks, let me tell you something. I'm not looking down my nose at anybody. This happened to me.
Right.
My banker called and said, Jim, you're out of cash. This was years ago. You're out of cash. I said, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Which was the wrong thing for me to say. And then he said, what are you going to do about it? I said, will you loan me money? And of course, you know, they will not. At that moment, folks, if they make the phone call, you're in trouble. If you make the phone call, you might have an opportunity to get some help.
Well, better yet, if you do the cash flow projection like you're talking about, Jim, let's say somebody's in a seasonal business and they need to spend a serious amount of cash in, say, September and October to bulk up for the holiday season.
Yep. Yep.
You go to the bank now and say, look, in order to meet my business plan, I'm going to need $50,000 or $500,000. And can we get the paperwork started in case I run short of cash in the fall?
And folks, if you'll use the spreadsheet I'm talking about, like I'm talking about, if you take the spreadsheet with you. That's what I've done, Doug. I actually take the spreadsheet. I show them, here's where it's coming in. Here's where it's going out. Here's where I'm going to be short. I'm going to need for 60 days, I'm going to need some money right there. And it's 5 months from now, 3 months from now, 2 months from now. I've never been turned down by a banker when I gave them that kind of information.
Well, I'm going to call your banker this morning and straighten him out.
You leave my banker alone. He's just fine.
Is he one of the ones that's been indicted or what?
No, he's an independent community banker. That's the kind of those are the bankers I do business with.
Well, that's one of the problems, and I know there's some people listening that used to have that nice little friend Joe down at the corner bank, and now that guy's part of some national bank that
there's still thousands, but Doug, there's still thousands of independent community banks that are doing business the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, but their numbers are dwindling, at least in this part of the
country. But you know what? But you know what, Doug? Every time one gets bought out, another one pops up.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm very happy to hear that. I mean, but anyway, that's another story. But the point is, folks, is whether it's a big bank or a little bank, if you can't show them where you're going to need the cash and show them how the other thing about the cash flow statement, Doug, I don't know if I told you this or not before, but a banker friend of mine 30 years ago told me, he said, Jim, if you can only bring me one document, bring me your cash flow statement. I've never forgotten that. He says, because that's the document where I can look at, that I can look at and see how I'm going to get paid back.
Yeah, yeah, that's the key, is how am I going to get paid back? But, we're not running down the balance sheet and the income statement, the other two important financial statements, but I couldn't agree more, particularly for small business or maybe a growing business, and that's the key. Let's think about it, Jim. Most of the businesses that you and I know that have failed over the years, it wasn't a bad idea. It wasn't lack of profit potential.
That's right.
It just simply ran out of money.
It might not even have been a lack of profit. They might have been making profit like crazy, but it's not enough cash.
They ran out of money, and it's typical when a business starts to expand. Think of the things that are all over the news these last couple of weeks of the airlines that failed. Wasn't a bad idea. There was no market for their product. It's just simply they ran out of cash.
Well, and the thing, folks, that the good thing about this cash flow statement is I can talk to it every day and update it every day. Your income statement, your balance sheet, is usually once a month at the most, and 2 or 3 weeks or more after the fact.
Jim, I got a statement last night. One of my retirement plans is in a particular mutual fund that I'm not terribly proud of at the moment.
Yeah.
They sent me a booklet yesterday that had financial statements for 2007. I didn't even look at it because that's worthless.
Exactly. It's old lettuce. It's old produce. You can't eat it. Hold on to that thought, Doug. We'll take a quick break, folks. When we come back, I'm going to get Doug to give us some tax tips for the rest of the year. Tintail, stay with us.
Why don't you come with me, little girl, on a magic carpet ride? You don't know what we can see.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Anyway, a little Steely Dan bringing us back. Welcome back, and we're visiting with our good friend Doug Stives, the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show, and Doug, you're going to give us some tax tips. By the way, let's mention Kirchen website. Give us that website, because we want to keep those guys healthy, don't we?
Well, that's the group that's paying my pensions, so you're darn right.
That's exactly right.
And I still go there and work a couple hours a day, but they're good guys, and it's Kirchen, Kirchen.com.
All right. You tell them we bragged on them today. Okay, what are some of the tax tips that we need to know about?
Well, the first one I have on my list here, Jim, is kind of got lost in the shuffle. Everybody knew all about the fact that if you filed your 2007 tax return and your joint income was below $150,000, you're either entitled to or you've already gotten this tax rebate, which for most couples was $1,200 plus $300 for each of their kids.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people listening already have those checks. My two emancipated daughters both got their $600, and they were delighted. I'm happy to tell the audience that you and I make too much money to get the rebate, but that's another story.
I've never gotten one of those.
Jim, I don't want one.
I think it's because I didn't file my taxes when they told me to. I extended it. See.
Well, I did too. My 2007 is not filed yet either. That's another topic for another time. But part of that bill, the same bill that Congress passed earlier this year to give people those rebates, also gave small businesses a first-year 50% depreciation, which means if somebody today goes out, say they're a farmer and they go out and buy a new tractor, or they're a construction company, go out and buy a new bulldozer, they can depreciate this year, the year of purchase, 50% of the purchase price. Now, that's just the icing on the cake. In addition to that, they also can do something that we've talked about before, Jim, take this Section 179 depreciation for up to the massive sum this year of $250,000.
So if the tractor costs $249,000, they can write the whole thing off.
Write the whole thing off. And let's say it costs $500,000. They take the $250,000 up front for the 179 depreciation, and of the second $250,000, they get half of that. It's another $125,000. And then they get the regular depreciation, which in my example is another $25,000 on the remaining $125,000.
And so if they're very profitable and they finance the tractor or the equipment, they actually have a cash flow positive situation, don't they?
If they're doing it correctly, yes. Now, you know, why does Congress put this stuff in the law? It's very simple. They want small businesses, they want big businesses for that matter, to go out and spend some of their cash, maybe some of their borrowed cash, as you just pointed out, to buy new equipment. What a great time to replace your computers or your equipment, or maybe downsize some of your vehicles so that you're not spending as much for gasoline under the inevitable cost increases there. So, you know, great stuff that came along. Some other things while I'm at it that I think everybody really needs to be aware of is if you're thinking about selling something, you still need to have your economic decision decide whether maybe this is not the right time to sell real estate or to sell out of the stock market, which has been not doing so hot the last few months. But if you do sell something that generates a so-called capital gain, this is the year to do it, because the 15%, as everybody, most people know, is the maximum federal tax rate on capital gains is 15%. I think that's going to be a dead dog after the elections, Jim.
Because you think Obama's going to get elected?
I don't think that matters. Whoever gets elected with a Democratic Congress, we're going to have an increase
higher
in
taxes.
Capital gains. You know, they have themselves convinced, they have the media convinced.
Unless we have a president who will veto it.
Well, maybe, and I'm not sure even John McCain would veto this. I think.
Well, I'm not saying either one of them would or wouldn't, but if we don't have one, I think you're right about that. I think without a presidential intervention, I think we're in for higher taxes.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I don't think. I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Even with presidential intervention. But the one that's going to whack people the hardest is the you know, the George Bush bill of 2003 reduced the maximum capital gains rate down to 15%, and most Americans don't like that, or at least they think they don't like it. And, you know, I think it'll whiz through Congress.
Yeah.
While we're on that, something else that's supposed to die in 2010 is estate taxes.
Yeah.
And both candidates, both McCain and Obama, have come out saying, no, that we can't let that happen. What I'm predicting, Jim, is that they'll freeze the estate and gift tax exemption at $3.5 million, where it's scheduled to go next year anyhow. And that has to happen next year. So there inevitably will be significant tax legislation a year from now, which will keep me busy. It's going to be an opportunity for my industry, frankly. But people listening and you and I are going to be paying more taxes. But I think we'll finally be able to settle down and understand how the estate tax planning is going to work for the next several years.
Doug, good tour of the tax situation, folks. I know you enjoyed that and got a lot out of it. Doug, thanks for being here today. Good job, and let's don't wait so long to get you back on the show.
Anxious to hear from you.
All right, thanks, Doug. Doug Stires, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I told you he's the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.